So the shiur today is going to discuss vacation rentals and some halachic issues that arise in this context. In the summer months, people rent. Sometimes they want to save money on vacations. They're not staying at a hotel. They may rent a house either through Airbnb or other websites. And sometimes they may rent houses from their friends, and different halachic issues arise. And we're going to discuss the following issues. At what point are you allowed to back out of an arrangement? Number two, can you sublease your apartment or your house that you're renting? And number three, when are you allowed to cancel your agreement if, let's say, there's some defect in the house that you're renting or there's some condition, some expectations that aren't met? Those are the three issues we're going to discuss. So the first issue, when are you allowed to back out of a deal? So first of all, we have to ask, when does a transaction between two parties, when is a transaction effectuated between two parties when you're renting a house? So the Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Ayin Tes Amud Alef, states, Uchshem she'akarka niknes bekesef bishtar uvechazaka, that just like land is acquired through the payment of money, by writing a shtar, a document, or by chazaka, by the purchaser taking possession of the land through working it, so too a rental deal is also finalized by the payment of money, by the writing of a shtar, of a deed, or by the renter taking possession of the land. So then the Gemara asks, schirus demai, when the Braisa speaks about a rental, what is it referring? Ilema schirus demetaltalim. If we're going to say it's talking about renting movable property, metaltalim ben ishtar ninhu, is movable property subject to the writing of a shtar, of a deed? So that can't be the context of the Braisa. So the Gemara answers, Amarav Chista Schirus de Karka. When we say that Schirus is nicknamed by Kesef Shtar Vechazaka, we're referring to Schirus of land, rental of land. So what emerges from the Gemara in Bava Kama is that there are three ways that you can rent land. You can rent a house through money, through a deed, and through Chazaka. What if you only put down a down payment and there's no stipulation? Let's say it costs $1,000 to rent a house for a week, and you put down $200. Do we say that you've only acquired the rights to $200 worth of the house rental? Or do we say that no, the deal has gone through, you've effectively rented the house for a week, and you cannot back out? You pay $200 and you owe another $800. So the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat, Siman Kuf Tzadi Seif Yud, based on the Gemara in Bava Metzia, states, Im Zakaf Alav HaNishar B'mil Vakana. And let's say that you give a certain amount, and the rest, that let's say, is, you say you're going to pay the rest later. You give a certain amount now, you pay the rest later. When it comes to buying something, so we say that's a kinyan. You put money down, and you purchase the property, and the rest is an IOU. So it's viewed as a down payment. The Gemara said, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Avalo nasan lo ela be'eravon ba'alma." But if you use an eravon, a pledge, let's say you give someone an asset. You give someone an asset for that's worth $200. Let's say you're buying some land for $1,000, and you're giving someone an asset for $200. So there, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Lo kana rak negen ma'osav." You're only purchasing. Then the money only goes to a proportion amount of land. That's what the Rama writes. However, the Shulchan Aruch seems to take the position, if we're not talking about an eravon, but just a regular loan, and you give a certain amount, the presumption is that is a down payment, and the rest of the money is an IOU. You can't back out of the deal. However, the Pischei Tshuva in Choshen Mishpat Reish Zayin Seif Yud Gimel cites this Shulchan Aruch, and it says, notwithstanding what it says in Shulchan Aruch Simon Kuf Tzadi Seif Yud, he writes, the Pischei Tshuva writes that, it says says, nowadays, he's quoting from a tshuva in the Be'er Mayim Chaim, that in his time, people gave deposits. And it was clear that if the buyer backed out, the deposit just went to the seller and you can back out. So this is against what went on in the days of the Shulchan Aruch. It seems to depend on the custom. And in fact, there are other, in the Minchas Pitim, Rav Meir Arik writes that others, in his town, that there was a different view, and he said that a deposit is a full-fledged transaction. And basically, what emerges is that if you look at the Gemara and you look at the Rishonim and the Achronim, depending on the time and the location, there were different views as to what the custom was in terms of if you, let's say, when it comes to a sale or a rental, if you gave a deposit, was that deposit considered an initial payment towards the rental? And essentially, you could still back out but forgo the deposit. Or do we say, no, once you give a down payment, then you owe the rest of the money, and this is simply a down payment. Now, then there's an IOU. I asked Rabbi Willig, and he's of the opinion that we follow the secular custom. That whatever the custom is in society today, that when you, let's say, if nothing is said, and you have you're renting a house for $1,000, and you give the, and you're the lessee, and you give the lessor $200, and it's not explicit as to what this means. So you go by the local custom. If the local custom is that the presumption is that when you do that, now you owe the $800, and you live there, and you have the right to live there for, you know, the rental period, and no one can back out, that would be how we would paskin. However, if the local custom is that when you put money down and you give someone a deposit, then you have the right to back out, it's just that the lessor keeps the deposit, so then that's what we would follow. It depends on local custom. Question is, what if there is no kinyan that's made? Let's say, for example, there is no kesef, there is no shtar, there is no chazaka, there is no minhaga sochrim, there is no, right, in certain communities, perhaps, handshake, and they say mazel bracha may constitute a kinyan. Let's say there is no, clearly no kinyan, there is simply words. I said, a lessee said to a lessor, let's make a deal, I'll rent for you your house for $1,000. The lessor said, fine, great, and they agree. But it's just devarim, it's just words. It's clear that according to the halacha, no kinyan has been done. So there has been no official kinyan. However, is it appropriate for, or is it allowed or appropriate for someone to back out? You know, based on perhaps rules of when you say that if you make a neder, if you sort of say, I'm going to do this, you have to go through with your word. So there's a debate in the Gemara and Bava Metzia of Daf Mem Tesam et Aleph. The Gemara says, Devarim Rav Amar Ein Bohem Mishum Mechusarei Emuna, that if you make a verbal commitment, Devarim, that's unaccompanied by an act of kinyan, an act of acquisition, Rav says, it does not constitute an act of bad faith. Everyone knows that even if you say, I want to do this, I want to enter into a transaction, let's make a deal, let's enter into a transaction, it's meaningless, mitzad halacha, and really mitzad anything, until you actually enter into a kinyan. That's what a kinyan is for. However, Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan Amar, Yesh Bam Mishum Mechusarei Emuna. Rav Yochanan says it does constitute an act of bad faith. And in fact, the Ramah writes that in Choshen Mishpat Reish Dalet Seif Yud Aleph, Afal Pisha Bidvarim Below Maos Yochel Lachzer Bo Vein Tzerch Lakabel Lo Misha Para. Even though that if there are simply words, and it's simply a verbal agreement, either side could back out, and no one receives what's called a Misha Para type of. It's like a curse, I guess, that Chazal would curse someone. They say that God who exacted punishment on the Dor Mabul should exact punishment on this individual. So it's called the Mishapara. He says it doesn't apply to someone who backs out of a verbal agreement. Nevertheless, says the Ramah, Mikol Makom Roi La'adam Lamor B'diburo, Av Bishalo Asa Shum Kinyarak Dvar Mama. Still, a Jew is supposed, an individual is supposed to stand by his words, even if he didn't make a kinyan. And even if there were just a verbal agreement, if you said you're going to do this, you should do it. Anyone who backs out, whether it's the buyer or the seller, Chazal are not happy with this person. However, the Ramah qualifies the statement. The Ramah writes, this only applies if you can't get a better price. There's one price, and you can't get a better deal somewhere else. Aval betray tare einze mimechusere amuna. However, let's say you enter into a verbal agreement with someone, and then you find out you can get it cheaper from someone else. That's fine, says the Rambam. However, he says at the end of the Sa'if, v'yesh omrim da'afilu betray tare aser lachzor v'mchazor bo yesh bo meshu mechusere amuna. He says some disagree. He says it's in the Mukha Yosef who disagrees with that position. And others. And he says, V'chein nira ikar. And this seems to be how we should paskin. In other words, the Ramah writes that seems like he sides with Rabbi Yochanan, that if you back out of a verbal agreement, it constitutes an act of bad faith. And he cites two positions in the Rishonim as to whether it's considered bad faith if you simply back out for no real reason, not because you can get a better deal, but what if you can get a better deal? So then that's a debate amongst the Rishonim, and the Ramah cites both views. And then he concludes, it's Ikar, we really should paskin like the view that even if you can get a better deal, it's not appropriate to back out. It's interesting, the Shach and others quote the Bach, who says, not so clear that Nira Ikar, that it's a suffix as to who we paskin like, the first opinion or the second opinion. When I asked Rabbi Willig about this, so he said it depends on the circumstances. How much of a better deal, how much of a financial loss, the affordability. So there is room to work with despite the Ramah's position of a chain Nira Ikar. What about subleasing a rental property? So there's a Tosefta in Bava Metzia, Perek Gimel, Halacha Aleph, which says the following. Eina shol rashe lahashil, v'lo hasocher rashe lahaskir. If I borrow a house, I'm not allowed to lend it to someone else. And if I rent a house, I'm not allowed to rent it to someone else. V'lo hashol rashe lahaskir, v'lo hasocher rashe lahashil. And if I borrow a house, I'm not allowed to rent it out. And if I rent a house, I'm not allowed to lend it out. V'lo zeh shemakpir natzol rashe lahafkidam. And also someone who leaves a deposit for someone else. So that person who is holding the deposit is not allowed to deposit it with someone else. Elim Kane knows on lo Baal Bayis Jerusalem. Last, the Baal Bayis explicitly gives him permission. So it seems pretty clear from this Tosefta, Baba Metzia, it seems very clear that if you rent a house from someone, you borrow something from someone, you can't rent it to someone else. However, the Rambam in Hilchos Schiras Perkei Halacha Hey seems to disagree. He says, "Mikana ni omer shamaskir bais lachaveru ad zman katzu v'rotza socher lahaskir bais la'acher ad sov zmano." That if there is someone who rents a house to someone else for a period of time, and the lessee wants to rent the house to someone else, Maskir lacherim, he's allowed to rent it to others. Imiyesh b'nei bayis k'minyan b'nei beso, provided that the lessee is subleasing it to the same number of people in his family. Aval im hayu arba lo yiskor lachamisha. So let's say the lessee had a family of four. He rented this house from the landlord. He's allowed to sublease it to someone else, another family of four, but not to a family of five. So, but what does the Rambam do with the Tosefta? So the Rambam writes, "Shelo amru chacham ben asocher rashi lahaskir ela mitaltalim." He says, when the Chazal and the Tosefta writes that the socher, the lessee, is not permitted to sublease the house, this only applies to metaltim, to movable property. Sherei omer lo, because the Baal, the owner, can say, "Ein ratzoni shehei pikdon biyarachem." I don't want my pikadon I don't want my object to be entrusted to someone else. Aval bikarka obisfina shrei bala ima eno markein. With regard to landed property or a ship, by contrast, the owner is with it at all times, or at least the owner can perhaps have access to the house at all times. And therefore, you don't have that same objection. The concept of ein ritzon shepik don't be aracher, so that applies to metaltalim. Because if I lend, let's say, a machine to, I rent out my machine or I rent out my computer to my friend, I have no idea where that computer is. That computer can be anywhere. The renter can take it anywhere. So I'm letting my lessee use the computer. But I'm not going to let him sublease it to someone else unless I explicitly give him permission. But when it comes to a house, why can't I give it? Why can't I rent it? Maybe I can rent it to my friend and he can rent it out to someone else. I always have access to that house because it's always there. So the Rambam's of the opinion that you could sublease your house, provided that if you're a family of four, you can only sublease it to a family of four. If you're a family of five, you can only sublease it to a family of five. The Ritva cites the opinion of the Rambam in Bava Metzia Daf Ayin Testament Beis, but he adds something. He says, "Vedino sherabenu zal emes kishanashim shavim." He says this only applies if the type of people are equal. She'ein kol diros bnei adam bebatim shavim, because not everyone, not all dwellers are the same. For example, a family that has four young kids is not the same as a family who have kids in their 14s. A young family of four is different than, let's say, four adults. So the Ritva is sort of qualifying the Rambam's qualification one step further. And he says that it's not only that you can't sublease it for, a greater number of people. Also, if the different types of people, who perhaps you would argue that the landlord would have an objection to subleasing to. Obviously, there's some gray there, but that's what the Ritva says. Not just the quantity, but also the quality. The Shulchan Aruch in Sima, in Chosha Mishpat, Siman Shintai Tes Zayin, Seif Gimel writes, the Yesh Misha Omer, Shafil Belo Tanai, Rashi Lahasko Lamashkan, so he writes that without a condition, he cites a Yesh Misha Omer, he cites the opinion that even without a condition, you can sublease. And the Rama adds the qualification of the Rambam, Lami shebnei beiso einam merubim, provided that the people to whom you are leasing to is not greater in number than your party. And the Achronim also have different views about this. And it seems that when it comes to subleasing, again, if there is a custom, if there is a communal custom, if there is no provision about subleasing, then you go perhaps, what's society's view about this, about subleasing or not subleasing? And absent that, it seems that according to the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, that there are grounds to sublease if there's no explicit prohibition in the contract. What about if you rent a house and you find out that, let's say, it's the summer months and there's no air conditioning in the entire house, can you back out of the deal? So the Shulchan Aruch in Chosha Mishpat, Reish Lamed Beis, Seif Gimel writes, Hamocher lechaveru karko eved o behema, o sha'ar metaltlin v'nimtza b'mekach mum, shlo yada bo halokeach. Let's say you sell to your friend land, or a slave, or an animal, or any movable property, and there is a defect, shelo yada bo halokeach, that the purchaser was unaware. Machziru afil achar kamashanim. Let's say you sell something to someone, and years later the buyer finds that there is a defect in the object. You can void the sale even if the purchase took place years ago. Shezeh mekach tolsu, because this is a defect in the property. But Shelo yishtamish b'mekach achar sheyeda b'mu. But that's only if the purchaser does not use the item after he becomes aware of the defect. Avol nishtamish bo achar shero hamu mareiz machal v'niyochal haachzer. But let's say the purchaser uses the item, so he's demonstrating that he is aware of the defect, but he still wants the item. So at that point, he is not allowed to retract and withdraw from the deal. So the point here is that if there is a fundamental flaw, defect in the item, so you could always void the deal at the point that you're made aware, if you're the purchaser, the point that you're made aware of the defect. But once you're aware of the defect and you demonstrate that you don't care about the defect by the fact that you use the item, so then you can no longer back out of the deal. How do you define what's considered a defect? So the Choshen Mishpat, Reish Lamed Beis, Sivav, the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat, Reish Lamed Beis, Sivav writes, Kol Sheiskim Olav Bnei Medina Shehumum Shemachzirim Bo Mekach Machzirim. Again, it depends on the society. It depends on local custom. If people would consider this defect to be a flaw, then it would be. So that's how we would understand. So for example, if let's say local custom is that if you rent a house in the summer and you find out that the entire air conditioning system doesn't work in the house, so maybe local custom is that would be considered a fatal flaw, and therefore you'd be allowed to back out of the deal even if you paid rent for it, even if you signed the contract. However, if let's say, I don't know, one room of the house did have air conditioning, so maybe that might not invalidate the contract, depending on local custom. Obviously, if the contract specifies these conditions, so obviously that would make a difference. But if without specification, you'd follow local custom in determining what is considered a fundamental defect. What about something that there's nothing wrong with the property itself? Let's say, for example, you planned on renting a home in a particular town, and it was known that the reason why people are renting homes in this particular town is there's a special festival that's taking place. And so you did the deal, and then the festival is canceled. It's clear that's why you rented the house. So you let it back out. So here, the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Mem Tesem and Bay states, Ahu Gavra Dezavin L'Nichsei Adaiti L'Mesach L'Eretz Yisrael. There was a person who sold his property with the intent to go to Eretz Yisrael. Uva'idna Dezavin, at the time where he sold, Lo Amar V'Lo Midi. He didn't say anything. He didn't say, I'm doing this only on condition that I make Aliyah. I'm selling this. But it's clear, everyone knows, that he's doing this because he's planning on making Aliyah. So what? And then, ultimately, he doesn't make Aliyah, and he wants to renege on the sale. So Amar Rava, V'Dvarm Shebelev, V'Dvarm Shebelev, Enam Dvarm. Rava says, since he didn't explicitly state that he was selling his property on condition that he would make Aliyah, so this is an unspoken matter, and this remained in his heart, it's Dvarm Shebelev, and this is not halakhically significant. That being said, based on the Rosh, the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat Siman Resh Zayin Seif Dalet writes, Aval HaMocher Stam, Av B'Shoya B'Libo Shemipnei Kach V'Kachu Mocher, V'Av B'Shenirim HaDvarim Shelo Mocher Elasos Kach V'Kach V'Lo Nasa. If someone Stam sells, just simply sells an item, even though it was in his heart that he's selling it because of a particular reason, and that reason never materialized, ain't a chose, you can't back out of the deal. Sherei lo perish, because he didn't explicitly state that I am selling this because of this, on condition that this should happen. Udvarim shebelev einam devarim, and his thoughts in his heart as the reason why he's selling is not halachically significant. And Shulchan Aruch writes, afi avu bishakorim bechira, Amar Shumocher al Das Lasos Kafakak, even though beforehand he said, before the sale, he said, by the way, I'm selling it because this is my intention. Since at the time of the sale he didn't say anything, he can't retract. However, the Rama writes, Mihu iika umdun demuchach. If there was a clear, if everyone knows that there is a clear implied condition, then nisbatel hamekach. Then the sale is invalid. So if it's very clear that everyone knows that why you're selling this or why you're buying this, and it's very clear, even if it's not written down, so then this condition is binding. So for example, so based on this, and there's a discussion also whether this halacha applies to sales, or maybe it only applies to does this also apply to rentals? Does this notion of implied condition only apply to sales or even to rentals? And there's a rush which infers from Rashi's comment on the Gemara that the case in the Gemara in Kiddushin where we talk about implied conditions, that's talking about actually a sale. But a rental may not apply because maybe when it comes to a sale, people don't just move locations unless there's a specific reason. But maybe it's different if you're dealing with metatlim or dealing with a rental, potentially. But many achronim say that they don't distinguish between metatlim and karka and movable items and real estate, or between rentals and sales. Rabbi Willick agrees with this position that the notion of implied consent, implied condition, applies even to rentals. So what would emerge from this is that whether there's a defect, or even if there is an implied condition that everyone is aware, and everyone would say that the deal would... That this is why he is renting this house, on condition that everyone knows that he's renting the house for a specific purpose, and that if this purpose does not materialize, he would not rent this house. And so therefore, even if the contract is silent, there may be grounds to void the contract as well. Obviously, if you write, let's say, for example, that you want to rent a house and you're renting a house in a specific location because there's this big festival taking place. So if you write in the contract that this contract is binding whether or not the festival takes place, you're explicit about it, so then even if the festival doesn't take place, so then obviously you can't back out. But you could make the argument that even if there's no defect with the house, but there's some external circumstance that everyone knows that that's why people are renting, and then it doesn't materialize, so then there might be an argument that you might be able to back out of the sale, the rental, as well, unless you make the contract explicit. So just to summarize, what we said today is, number one, we mentioned three ways to effectuate a kinyan when it comes to effectuate a transaction when it comes to rental, either through money, through a shtar, through a document, a contract, or through chazaka to actually take possession of the land. And we discussed that what if you make a down payment and it's not clear, it doesn't specify the nature of that down payment. So the truth is, there, if you look throughout the Gemara, the Rishonim, and the Acharonim, there are different views depending on the time and the location as to whether we say that is considered just a deposit and you can back out but lose the deposit, or whether that's considered a down payment and you owe the rest of the money. So that depends on local custom. Then we discussed what happens if you simply make a verbal agreement. Can you back out of a verbal agreement? Said Machlokes in the Gemara. And the Rama takes the view that if you just to back out, Ein ruach chachamim no chahimenu, if you're just backing out because you don't want to do the deal, the chazal are not happy with you. However, if you can get a better deal, if you're backing out because you can get a better deal, so then the Rama cites a debate as to whether you can back out. The Ramah seems to say that even if you get a better deal, you shouldn't back out. But, as I mentioned, Rabbi Willig says it depends on the circumstances. If you can get a much better deal, the question of affordability, so there might be some wiggle room. Are you allowed to sublease an apartment that you are renting? So even though the Tosefta seems to say no, the Rambam writes that only applies to metaltalim, but for karka, you are allowed to sublease if there's no provision one way or the other, but you can't rent out to more people than you rented out for. If you're a family of four, you can only rent out to a family of four. This seems to be the position of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah cited. But again, if local custom disagrees, it has a different view, so you might also follow local custom. And then we discussed what happens if there's a defect in the house that you're renting. So if it's something that the local custom is that this is considered a mum, it is a defect. If the local custom is that this is a significant defect, so you can back out of the deal. And you could make the argument, if everyone knows why you are renting this house, and everyone knows that people would not rent it if not for some additional reason. So it's what's called an umdana demucha. Everyone knows this is why you're renting it. Then you might even be able to void the deal if it's an umdana demucha. Even if you didn't specify this condition in the contract, you also might be able to back out of the deal.